Hey, Andy, it's Ryan Patrick Dempsey from the band Twiddle. calling you again, man. okay, well, you know, hit me back. This is the 10th time I've tried to call. It's Ryan Patrick Dempsey from the band Twiddle again. We've been on tour with you. I play the piano. All right, man, hit me back. Love you so much. Bye-bye. It's, I'm on my last straw right now. You know, call me back. You call Mickey back. You call Mahali back every time. But no, what's old Ryan calls again? Where's Andy all of a sudden? Where is he? You know, he's out hanging out with his better friends, maybe? Just call me back, dude. Mark Zuckerberg did this to me a long time ago, and I know an abusive relationship. You tell me you're going to pick up. You tell me you're going to pick up every time I call, and every time I call, I get the same fucking answering machine. No, I would have. Fuck you, dude. I know I'm not Mahali, but I'm dressed in my Pooh Bear suit. I want to get this thing going. Please call me back. Bye.
1, 2, 3. Let's make some friends in the Twiddle crowd that knew all their cocaine. Let's make some friends and knew all of their cocaine.
Get out there, boys.
One big, happy, goddamn family out here. And we're back. Andy Frasco's World Saving Podcast. I'm Andy Frasco, and I'm with it makes me sad, but I'm with the whole fucking gang tonight. What's up? We got Twiddle in the building.
Let's go.
Wow. The boys. Even we got the new guy, Adrian, just sitting in the back, just putting in the corner over there. What a fucking tour. We are in Washington, D. We are in Richmond, Virginia.
Richmond, Virginia.
Where the fuck?
Of the country.
Oh, this tour has been fun. Mickey, how you doing, buddy?
I'm good, man. How are you?
You ready? I miss you already.
I know. It's going to be sad. It's been quite a lovely experience.
It's been from everything, from buying overpriced shoes with you almost getting killed by the Nitrous Mafia with Ryan Dempsey. What the fuck, Dempsey?
Yeah, no, that was fun. You had my back the whole time, though.
Yeah.
You weren't going to let them hurt me.
I would never let them hurt you.
Of course.
But and we got Gub. I never get to talk to Gub. Gub's in here at the building too. What's up,
Let's
Gubby?
Go.
Let's go.
What's up?
How's it going?
I'm good. How you doing?
How is it having a pocket with Adrian over here?
Oh my lord! I live every day for the moment he turns and looks at me and smiles because I did something right.
You know? Oh, nice.
Hey, yeah.
Adrian, do you feel the same way?
I feel it's like a nice shoe that fits right here.
Yeah.
It's like, broken in well and deep gaping pockets. Yeah, it fits well.
I will remember.
We go in. I
remember this tour forever because, you know, it's like when you go on tour with a band, sometimes the chemistry does not work on the hang part. You know, we're not going to call names out or anything, but you will.
No.
Talk your shit, Dempsey.
We're going to go there.
No. Come on, Dempsey, get it out. But we've been really vibing here, and I'm just going to miss every second of it. This is going to be a great one. How you doing, Sean? You holding up?
I'm here.
Hi.
I get just enough sleep to pull all this shit off.
That's the hardest part, you know, just getting enough fucking sleep. You guys just stay up all night. I've been staying up all night with Dempsey every night, talking, smoking cigarettes with the fucking driver.
GTA, too. Yeah, we had a great talk with our driver.
Yeah.
You were enamored and, like, totally focused in on, you're like, Ryan, shut up. He had so many stories, like, just, yeah, I don't know if you want to tell, I mean, the stories he had, like.
Do you always get close with your bus drivers, or is it, everyone's different?
Mostly me. It's usually me.
It's just you. You're crazy ass.
Once I know that someone's like a, you know, Trump supporter, I kind of back off.
Let's not go there.
Yeah, okay, I'm not coming up here again.
There's
but
a few drivers that don't like Ryan.
Say that again, yeah. Mickey. A
couple drivers haven't liked Ryan.
What's the worst Ryan experience with a driver?
I don't. Ooh. Oh,
man. Gub, you think you got this one?
Well, it depends on if Ryan wants me to tell him about that. I mean,
yeah.
He was pretty proud of it, but one night, Yeah. Yeah, one night he just walked off the bus for a cigarette and found a dead owl. And he took the owl and placed it, propped it right up in the bathroom to see who would fucking run into it.
Are you fucking serious?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Did it smell?
Yeah, defend yourself there.
Do you have anything to say about that?
Nah, I just woke up in the middle of the night to take a piss. And I was just... I was saying piss, and I, you know, my heart like jumped out of my body. It was really beautiful. I think sadly died from the fires that were happening like around there. That,
oh, but, man.
But yeah, it scared the shit out of me. But I didn't scream or anything. I just sort of looked at it and was like, oh, it's got to be Dempsey. And I just left it there. And then.
So I got a lot of flack from the fan base from this. I didn't. They were like, they're going to think you killed that owl. I found it. It was beautiful. It was a beautiful barn owl, and I'm a big bird fanatic. I knew what it was, and it had died from the fires, like Mickey said. And so I thought I'd prop it up on the sink with the feathers out, like so when they walked in, they'd be like, "What?" You know, at 3 a.m, like there's a big owl like propped up. But we ended up burying it later in respect. We gave it a grave.
Why did your fan base give you shit?
Because they're like. Man, they thought I was disrespecting the owl. And I'm like, no. I mean, the owl died anyway.
Hold on. Did you take a picture? How did they know?
Oh, there's pictures.
Oh, wow. Pictures.
Jesus. Jeez, come on, Debs.
You definitely were, like, on your Instagram or something. Like, oh, yeah. The dead owl. We'll put it on the bus.
Making a fucking live, making a fucking talk show out of the dead owl. You know, PETA's going to be watching your ass.
I was just waiting for the next guy. To go in the bathroom.
A yelp.
And dude, scream. It was a loud fucking scream.
Oh, God. Did you it was a big wings? Owl?
Oh, yeah, dude, and the wings were out.
I mean,
I fucking, God, dude, I was scared. Like,
dead birds are famous for carrying disease. I mean, are you worried about the CDC?
Like,
ground zero for owl flu.
Yeah, COVID would not like that. The COVID police would not like that.
Wait. When was this? Was it January?
No,
2020?
Yeah.
Fucking patient zero over here. Dempsey over here, patient zero.
Wuhan, my ass.
Wuhan. It's
the first carrier.
Fires. It was the fires. Like, we were literally following the fires as we were traveling down California. And yeah, the birds were falling out of the sky because of the smoke. So I love animals, and I didn't mean to disrespect. We buried it. To the fans, let me let you know, like, you know.
You know, man, I have to believe that the owl probably wanted that. You know, you just got to believe.
One last ride.
One last ride. Let's go. I'll clap to that.
Yeah, clap it up.
Oh, boys. I got a couple more questions. What's it like not being able to tour with Brooke?
It's been, you know, it's been interesting, obviously, not having someone we've been with for our whole career.
Yeah.
But Adrian really stepped up to the plate and did a great job filling in and learning the songs really quickly and professionally. So it was, it's been nice to kind of get out and play. We just haven't been playing a lot in the last year, so.
It's fucking
good
awesome.
To be
back
on the road for sure.
You know, and it's like it's got to be hard. You know, it's like we kind of have to deal with that with Floyd, because Floyd just shows up whenever he fucking wants to. And he's like, hey,
I forgot I got to coach my hockey team, so I got to leave.
I'm like, what? We're halfway in this tour, Floyd.
That's why I saw him. He's like, yeah, we're going on a vacation or something. He's family vacation. You got to do it. Yeah.
Not too many babysitters on the island of Nantucket. We come to find out.
I'm just, you know, it's just a pleasure in my life to hang out with you guys. I'm just honored. And after I saw that picture of Adrian's dick. Did you see that thing yet? Have you seen that thing
Everybody
yet?
Everybody saw it.
Holy
it's
shit.
Unbelievably impressive.
I'm
going to
post it up. Yo. Bo, put up that picture.
It's a big flex.
Whoa, you see that thing? Holy shit. Fucking hog leg. Whoa. Jesus Christ. Adrian, save some pussy for the rest of us.
Tripod.
Jesus.
Tripod.
Wow.
But we're here. Sean and Adrian. Let's go. So what is the ritual? Like, when you get off tour, boys, what do you do? Like, do you guys not talk to each other for a couple days? Or
yeah, basically, we don't really talk too much in those first few days. Everybody's home life, I suppose, is different.
Yeah. What about you, Gub?
Hey, the funniest thing, too, though, is that all of our leaders are like, let's all get together and hang out. And we're all like,
nah, fuck that. I just heard Dempsey talk about aliens till 6 a.m. for 7 days straight.
Does the group chat die?
Yeah, it dies.
Yeah, our group
Ryan
chat
will
is...
send TikToks like into the group for the next like few weeks.
Yeah. Totally warms
yeah.
back up.
Yeah.
I got other shit to do, okay?
Well, guys,
he called
I just,
me like 4 times or 2 in the morning. He's like, why aren't you picking up? I'm like, dude, I have kids. I was like, I went to bed at 10 o'clock.
I have this other fucking life, Dempsey.
Yeah. You can't ever get a hold of Mahali. Like, he and I lived in a room together. We used to be best friends. And like, now I feel like, oh, he's got family now. And
I'm not
important enough to have pick up my fucking phone call.
Wow. Tension.
I totally get it.
Here's the dirt.
Tension.
But I do something to say, though, when you come off tour, I'm not looking forward to this, is the switch around of the schedule.
Yeah.
With I'll stay up staring at the wall, and Alex is like, just sleep. Just close your eyes. I'm like, yes.
Yeah, 2 weeks I've been going to bed at 4 in the morning.
You have no idea. Like, yeah. I have to be up till 6 in the morning, and I'll wake up at 3. So usually I take some acid and just...
get the rewire.
20 hours of, like... hardcore just staying up until I like forced myself to sleep at the right end.
What about you, Gov? What do? You made a sleep record, so I'm assuming.
Well, I was just going to say, you know, don't feel too bad, Ryan, because I don't have a family and I'm still not picking up your phone calls. So.
Shots fired. Shots are fired. Shots are fired over here in the Twiddle Frasco tour.
I love you.
That's how it is too in our band. We keep it going
sometimes.
Yeah, but we don't talk like that during quarantine.
I call when I need something.
I think during quarantine we talked maybe 3 times.
Yeah, the beginning it was like we had one Zoom call. We had one
Zoom meeting. We're like, all right, we're done with this.
Well, we do 250 shows a year. So like when I had the first 2 months of quarantine, I was like stoked. To not see any of you guys. I didn't play drums for like 2 months. I picked up another instrument, learned that instead.
Cool. What'd you pick up?
Guitar.
Cool.
A guitar and singing. I mean, I already played guitar, but I honed in.
Yeah.
I kept calling. I would call Sean. I called Sean more than anybody because I'm like, hey, what are the chords to that one song? And he's like trying to show me, and it's like backwards on Zoom. I'm like,
Right.
No. What are you going to do?
You know, I want to get one more outside source in here. Yo, let's get Dave up here. Dave, get in here, bud. Get in here. Dave, get in here. The man, the treasurer, our guy, Dave. Come on. Don't worry. It's only my show, bud.
There you go. Sit on it.
Sit on his lap. Dave, tell us, you watch everything. You know, things we miss, you probably see more than we do. What was the craziest thing you've seen these boys do live in action?
I saw Ryan bring the Nitrous Mafia on the bus last night.
Really?
Yes.
What? In Philly? Like
in
OG?
The hometown in Philly.
What? Ryan, why did you even say anything about that?
I don't know if I should say this on
your podcast. Oh my God, we're cutting that out of the podcast.
You asked me, cut that out.
God
cut that out. Okay.
Damn it. How do you have,
I know someone from the Hell's Angels, bro. Like, come on.
We do too, Dempsey.
I know. Like,
we're not asking them for deals on Nitrous.
No, I was trying to give them a chance to make a lot more money than they were making.
What a nice guy.
I was being like a
nice guy.
So you don't have to pay high prices.
Wow.
But yeah, don't put that in me.
Yeah, you've said it all.
I don't want to get killed. And I don't want to mention anything else.
Guys, I know we gotta get off and do our sound check. I just want to say thank you.
Thank you, buddy.
Adrian, I've fucked with your band with Kung Fu, and I love you in this band. You sound great in this band, and I just want to say, let's clap it up one more time for Adrian. Filling in. Our guy. Our guy. Killing it.
I'm really thankful for what's going on right now.
Awesome. That was from the heart.
Hey, Adrian. Adrian, tell us about your first hot bag.
Oh yeah, first off,
explain what the
tell
everyone what a hot bag is. You know what a hot bag is?
No, listen, you gotta go. You can't shit on the fucking bus.
You can't shit on a tour bus.
Oh, you shit in a bag?
So if you gotta go and the thing's moving, sometimes you gotta go. You know, you gotta put a bag in the toilet.
I woke up
and then disperse of the bag.
Wow.
I woke up early one day and I was just like, checking my Instagram in the front. And all of a sudden, I'm not going to say whose name it was, but he rolls out of the bathroom and just spinning this hot bag. Oh, like it's a goddamn rodeo in this bitch. It's like another one bites the dust, boys. So shout out to Hot Bags, whoever hot created bags. That.
And we found out about the hot bag on our first. Yeah, it's a thing.
Well, Dave Matthews, didn't he like spray?
He did.
They
sprayed
the whole sprayed like, the cruise.
He hot bagged. He hot bagged the whole cruise. Well, you guys are fortunate. We just like shit ourselves or pee ourselves because we got a big old van. We got a van.
There's nowhere to go, brother.
There's nowhere to go. We're going out of here, brother.
Pull over now.
Oh, my God. That remember that one time with Brian Burkhart?
Oh, yeah. Never forget it.
Oh, my God. Do you want to tell that story?
Yeah, I mean,
Sean?
It was, I don't know where the fuck we were, but I mean, it was somewhere in the West Coast. Brian Burkhart, love you, buddy, Arkansas. And he had to shit so bad. It was like, dude. There's no exits coming up. No exits coming up. We pull over, and he had to brand down by like a river or something. Of course, we all have our fucking phones out, and we're like, yeah. He said, "Fuck you guys!" And he's taking a shit, and then seriously, get back in the van, go over the next hill, and there's like the Mecca travel site.
There's nothing, dude.
Almost made it, man.
Nothing for miles, man.
You probably still stop so you can like clean up the residue.
Of course. Oh yeah.
We didn't clean it all good on it.
Wow. Wow, what a podcast. Hot bags.
From
dead owls to hot bags.
And this beyond.
Is, what a ride.
Our tour with Twiddle, what a ride. And I don't think this should be the last time we do this, right, Mahali?
No,
boys, promise?
It will be.
We're going to do... Oh, really? Well, Dempsey, kiss me like a man on this podcast.
Oh.
Come here.
This is the fifth one.
Love is love, y'all. Love is love.
Let's go. See, Floyd, you watching this, bitch? Ooh. You ain't kissing me in front of thousands of people.
Floyd will be jealous.
Floyd, yeah.
Jealous. Bitch.
Floyd will be jealous.
Guys, thank you so much. Let's go finish up this tour. I fucking love you. Go listen to Gubb's Sleep Record. Boys, this has been such a fucking ride. Mickey,
fuck yeah.
I feel like we've gotten closer through this ride. Dude. Dempsey, you're the man. Adrian, keep slinging that big old dick, baby.
Only you two know about the pillow.
Yes. All right, we're done. We're done.
This is getting real gross.
Yeah, guys, I love you. You guys have a great trip to Charleston. We're gonna, you boys.
We're going to
Oklahoma.
18-hour drive.
We'll see each other in Vermont. Guys, enjoy it. We got John Craigie, my other boyfriend. Oh. He's on there. I got all my boyfriends on the podcast today. We love you. Hey, who wants to do a motivational speech? Mickey, you want to say some? Give us some love for the people here? What do you got for them? To make them have a great week this week. What do you got?
Always move forward, never backwards.
Wow. Okay, cool.
That's it. I love it.
All right, I didn't have to play the fucking Rocky music.
straightforward.
Always forward. Sometimes sideways, diagonals, okay. Backwards, never good.
Well, thank God. I love you guys. Let's go fucking rock. Richmond, Virginia. Bye, guys. We'll see you tomorrow or next week. I don't know who's on the show, but we'll figure it out. Bye.
Nice. Thanks, guys.
Ladies and gentlemen, I like to talk about Repsy.com. We forgot to talk about it during the opening segment. But sign up for Repsy.com. They're a great company. If you're in a band, if you are a DJ, if you're a comedian, I mean, if you have a talent that you want to do for the entertaining of the arts, put your band's profile or your artist profile on Repsy.com. It's a win-win. If you have an agent, they don't take a cut. If you do not have an agent, and take a small cut, and you might as well get as many people as you can out there going to bat for you, because it's hard times out here. I'm out here in the trenches. I see all the shows that are happening and all the new shows that are coming up. There's going to be a lot of competition, so you might as well get as much as you can out of all the people helping you out. So please sign up for Repsy.com, and like Nick, right? Sign up for Repsy.com.
Yeah.
Sign up for Repsy.com.
I'd just like to add that if you do currently have an agent, you don't have to pay double booking fees.
All right, we're done. I love you. Thank you, Repsy, for sponsoring the podcast. John Craigie is back in Denver.
These cameras are nice, man.
Thanks.
Yeah.
We're live.
Balance. Oh, sorry.
What's up, Craigie?
It's good, man.
How you doing?
Good. Denver, snow.
Yeah, you're not a fan of snow, huh?
Theoretically, yes. I think it's really cool, but I don't. When I'm in it in the city, I hate it. If I'm out in nature and woods and all this stuff, I love it. But
what about during traveling? Like you're a one man traveling circus. Like you have to drive your own rental car and shit. It seems like it's a lot of work.
Yeah, I was telling you I did Ace yesterday, and Ace is like everything bad, you know. Like I was telling you, you know, you get there, and when you leave baggage claim, all the normal ones, Hertz, yeah, Budget, they're all like, shuttles are waiting for you. And then it's like, oh, you're Ace? Go fuck yourself, man. Go walk. You got to walk a long time. You got to call them up like they're your dad, you know. Come pick me up, you know. And like, yeah, we'll be there. And then I get there and she's like, we have a Nissan Ionix or something. I was like, what year was that? Like, what country is that from?
When did they make a Nissan Ionix?
Yeah, it's something strange, man. It's like when you rent cars, it's like always the same thing. It's either Chevy Cobalt, Nissan Versa,
yeah,
or whatever with a Ford one is. It's always the same three cars.
Yeah.
Anyway.
So what's it like just traveling by yourself and doing this by yourself? Because you said you like it. I've also talked to you, like, when you're in Hawaii, sometimes it's pretty lonesome and stuff. Yeah. Give me, like, the ups and downs of doing this by yourself.
Well, I'm starting to, you know, not do it all by myself anymore because it does. Yeah, I think the lonesomeness was less so in the early days when it was, like, couch sleeping, you know. When you'd play, like, a show to 10 people, weirdly, it was less lonely because you'd be in the same room with those, you'd be in a coffee shop with those people.
Right.
You're like hanging out with them before the show. You're hanging out with them after the show. You go out after the show, you know, to the bars with all those 10 people.
Mm-hmm.
You probably stay at the apartment of five of those people. You're surrounded by your fans and your friends the whole time. And then you hit a certain point where like, that's just not how it goes anymore. You know, you're at, I play Bluebird or whatever. You're backstage the whole time. You're not commingling. Now I'm not going to the merch table anymore. So, and then I'm getting a hotel. And I think COVID especially like, right, you know, ramped that loneliness up for all those reasons. People weren't supposed to hang or you couldn't hang. So I got a TM now that I'm starting to use more, basically anything more than like a week long, he's coming.
What about this run?
Nah, because this is just like one day Colorado, 2 days Idaho, 2 days Utah. Oh, so cool. It didn't make sense.
You're flying to each one?
Mm-hmm.
Nice.
But in next month, I'll go to the East Coast for like 3 weeks. He's coming.
Oh,
I got a merch person, my dear friend Morgan. She's awesome. And then my bass player Aviva. They're all just good friends. And I'm like starting to like have it. And my friend Gregory kind of told me that. Isaacoff, you know, he was saying how he really likes having his crew because you just have people to hang out with.
Yeah.
Like cards with or whatever. So
in a way, like your stories are a part of your show.
Yeah.
So like how hard is it to have a band? Like when you're by yourself and you could, like I'm less insecure when I'm by myself working shit out. But like when I have a band behind me, you know, it's got to be harder or you feel more insecure. Like, oh, they're hearing the same stories or they're playing the same songs. Like what's the difference?
Yeah, I think it's just, that's another like trait I look for in hiring someone is like, can they hang with that?
Right.
And I think my biggest issue with a band is just not knowing exactly what if my crowd needs that or not. You know, that's something that's important in this business is like you get to know your audience and then you get to know like what it is that they like about your show. And hopefully it's the same thing that you like, you know, it's gotta be a compatible marriage. And it's like, sometimes people, you know, maybe you're Gautier or whatever, and everyone just wants to hear that song.
Yeah.
And maybe you don't want to play that song. I'm trying to think of other bands that like, well, there's stories I've heard of bands who like don't like their fan base. You know, their fan base kind of annoys them to a certain extent. You know, like the Dave Matthews thing. I'm going to say nothing bad about Dave, but I have heard that like there is such a stigma around like the Dave bro fan base that I think even he maybe is like, you know.
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah. Anyway, but to put it like more simply is like, it seems to me that they just want to hear the songs and hear the stories and they don't really care if I have a big band or a small band or no band. So with that, it's like, all right, is the band there for me? That's fine. They don't seem to mind it. But to what extent? And you know, it's obviously it's more expensive. It's more, there's just like so many more factors when you're not by yourself.
Right.
But it's at the point now where no TM is getting tricky.
Yeah.
Because like I said, in the old days, you're in the coffee shop and if you like need to go on stage or stage, you know, to the corner of the room, you walk up there and put your thing. But you can't do that when you're at Bluebird. You got to have somebody, you know, or just little things like that, or just someone's got to walk out and grab your water or your check. Or so that is different. And I like my buddy Joe has been great with that. And but anyway, yeah, I think that's a tricky thing. Band or no band.
You bring up a good point. Like what are we doing this for? Ourselves or for the people?
Yeah.
You know, so like we try to take away our personal loneliness so our fans could have the best show they can have. But and it sometimes does it, it probably kills you a little bit, you know, when you're fucking sitting, you know, 3,000 miles away, sitting at a, you know, honeymoon resort and you're sitting on on the chair by yourself, like, okay, well, I'm getting suntan and, you know, I'm not the type of dude who's just going to like go to the bar and meet someone. Like it's got to be in your head about that a lot.
Yeah. When we were just talking, whatever that was, like a week ago
when you're in Hawaii.
I was at the Sheraton in Kauai, the coconut Sheraton or whatever. It's a very romantic place.
It feels like a honeymoon spot.
Oof. Oh, it was like full on. And they told me, you know, I was just, that's where I was playing. I actually wasn't staying there. I was staying with some friends, but I was like there all day and they were so nice. They're like, yeah, do whatever you want. Pool. So I was poolside and I'm in the pool by myself. You know, everyone else is like doing watsu, you know, like with their lover. Like, you know, it was definitely weird.
Does that make you more lonely when you see all that stuff around you?
Sure.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's not that big of a, it's not the, that's not the biggest concern. It's just sort of like the base.
What is the concern?
I guess every, you know, maybe larger things, the larger questions, just always the, what am I doing with it all? What, you know, and then the passing of, like, I trip out a lot on the movement of time and the quickness of it.
Yeah.
And obviously as a, like a career musician, you can, it's really good to throw your all into it and you're doing all these good shows and everything's moving forward. But then, it's that question of like, am I giving myself enough, am I doing enough for myself? But because in the beginning, when you're just starting out, and that's the dream, right?
Yeah.
It's like, then it's almost more for you than the people, right?
Right.
Like, and the people kind of know that, you know, when you're playing to the 10 people at the coffee shop, they're there because they like it, but they're also there because to support you, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And maybe you're doing Patreons or Kickstarters or whatever. And everyone's like, I'm rooting for John to like, to get up.
Go there.
But at some point that flips and everyone is kind of like, oh, he's got it. And I'm just a fan. And it doesn't like, he doesn't care if I come to his show or not. And in some ways that's kind of cooler, I guess. Maybe it's like a weird, like that's a weird psychology of, he doesn't need me. So I actually want to go more or whatever. Right. I don't know. That's not my area of expertise, but that flip is interesting because then all of a sudden you're there for them, you know, which is cool.
Yeah.
And you are living the dream, but has it changed, you know? And not for me necessarily, because it still feels like that combination, but you can definitely get lost in it, especially when everything is like kind of works out, you know. But I was thinking about this recently, like I used to go on tour and have no idea what was going to happen each night. Right.
Yeah.
I'm going to Charlotte or whatever, playing a place, but there's no ticket sales, right? Or there's no pre-sale.
Right.
So it's like, it could be zero people. It could be sold out. I have no idea until it's happening. Now, you know, I got Phil emailing me ticket sales every week. So now it's like, I know kind of how it's going to go down. You
do
know
you like
I mean?
It better that way?
Yes. I mean, it definitely is less stressful and it's way more efficient. It's way more professional. But I was just thinking about that. Like there was something really interesting to that. And it kept me more on my toes and definitely was like, you definitely weren't going to get bored by it, you know, but you definitely had like those, I don't have those crushing lows like I used to have back then. You know what I'm talking about? Like a night where you did everything. You like sent out the posters, you, whatever, all the stuff, all the radio promo and then nobody comes, you know, I haven't had one of those in so long, which is great.
Yeah.
But I don't know. There's something to that. That's when you're in your head and you're like, oh, I'm on my journey, man.
Yeah.
When everything is selling out and everything's really good, then you start to, I don't know, you just start to really, maybe you feel like it's not your journey. Also too, like when your team is building, when you got your Phil and your booking, your Thomas, your booking agent, all these great people who work for me, it's everyone's journey, you know?
Yeah. And that's the existential crisis I get is like, you know, like we're path goers.
Yeah.
So like, when we see our dream, how do we keep going without feeling like, all right, I'm here. Now I should just do something else. Like, sure. What? How do we change our minds to saying, all right, I've always wanted to sell out shows. We're selling out shows now.
Yeah.
So what is, how do you like level up in the dream?
Exactly. Because eventually it just becomes like a nice, efficient job, yeah. Which is really good.
Yeah. But that's not us.
It's not us.
We don't like standing still.
Yeah. And that's why we got into this game to not do that. Right.
Right.
We weren't,
exactly.
We didn't want to be bankers or lawyers or whatever. Now I think it's kind of cool with music because it is always, it could change any day now. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? It could, tomorrow. It still is that way, right? I say, okay, we're going to go play in Boulder, or whatever. Right. Still, no one may come. Yeah. Now I kind of know as it's happening.
Yeah.
But there was a show recently, maybe a couple years ago, in like Birmingham, where the tickets just weren't selling.
Yeah.
And it was funny. It was really stressing me out.
Yeah.
And I told Phil, I was like, let's just cancel it. And he was like, no, man, just do the show. And but for some reason, I was like, I can't do it. And then I was like, wait, I did that all the time. Yeah. And, you know, it wasn't, I had played Birmingham once, so it wasn't a big ego blow, but people came. It was fine.
Yeah.
But I was freaking out, man. I was calling the venue. I was like, can we like shrink the room? You know? Can we like put up some like,
yeah.
Can we take out the chairs, you know, things like that. And everyone was like, what are you tripping on, bro? But I think it was an ego thing of me afraid to go back to that.
Right. And it's always about, you know, it's like, You want to build your environment. So like, yeah. You don't want to tell stories where it feels like you're in a, you know, an audit, like a fucking gym hall.
Of course.
Where it's too big for the environment. And Todd Glass talks about that all the time about me. He's like, he sets it up. If the room's big and you're only half capacity, yeah, put curtains around it to like build environment. So you're not wrong about that.
No. And that's a whole psychology of obviously, you know, playing to like 40 people in a 40 person room, that show's going to be way better than playing to, you know, 500 people in a 2000 person. Like, it's not about how many people are there. It's how packed is the place, mm-hmm. right? That's why I always tell newcomers, you know, if I was going to give a TED talk or something, or if I was like, if anyone asked me,
well, I'm asking you.
Yeah. This was my sort. At some point I realized this philosophy, which I would call sell out the closet. Okay. And what I mean by that is like, I used to just play wherever, right? I used to be like, I want to play Catalyst Santa Cruz or something like that. I'd play Catalyst would let me play there. And then 30 people would come in and would feel stupid, you know?
Right.
I realized that the people don't care what room it is. They care about how full it feels. Mm-hmm. So I would say like, okay, if I have two fans in Minneapolis or whatever, find a room that's like play a closet, you know,
right.
And sell that and sells out. Right. Yeah. And then everyone, oh, sold out Minneapolis. Cool. Yeah. Again. And that's my old bit. Like nobody gives a shit. And so that's what I would do. I would realize, sort of get an idea of what my fan base was, find the smallest room possible, play it. And then as soon as you slowly build out of that.
Right.
And that was way more, and especially, and again, it is kind of a comedian thing, right?
Yeah.
You know, if you went to go see like Leo Kottke or like someone instrumental, you wouldn't care so much if the room, it still feels a little weird. But when you're trying to talk to people, once you talk to people, you're like acknowledging the moment that we're all in, right? Mm-hmm. So you're being like, hey, we're all here right now. And that's when people start to be like, oh, this is awkward. Or if you're even, or any humor whatsoever, you know.
You ever have to do like a corporate gig and you had to like talk and do your show?
One time I played for the North Face, corporate, what do you call it? Like, what's the corporate retreat,
you know,
which was like, it's a story I tell on stage. So I won't give you the whole bit, but basically two guys on the North Face, like, board, I think were fans.
Right.
And the way I see it is they had their meeting because these corporate retreats, they usually hire like B-52s or Elton John or like, you know, they hire like I know those are different kind of acts, but they hire like a name everyone knows, whether or not they're like old school or whatever. They usually don't hire like an up and coming indie artist. So my theory was that they were at the thing and they were like, we need a band for this. And those two people were like, we should get John Craigie. And everyone else was like, okay, I guess we're just not hip enough, whatever. Let's get the guy.
Yeah.
So they called me. I had no Phil back then. So they offered me at that time more money than I'd ever been paid, which if I told you, it's a pretty sad thing. But I was like, oh my God, it was going to pay off like a lot of different little credit card debts I had and stuff. And I said, yes, no negotiation. And they were stoked on that because I'm sure what they would normally pay. Anyway,
yeah.
It was at North Star Tahoe Resorts.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I go to this thing and it was hilarious because they were outside. This was in like the spring or whatever. They were outside in one of the like, you know, bowls or whatever. Huge crowd. The CEO is out there giving like a really cheesy like corporate talk of like, these sleeping bags are, you know, like whatever. He's just like, they're talking all corporate stuff. Yeah. But then he starts doing this thing where he's like, you know what? Like REI is having their retreat in some stuffy hotel in St. Louis. We're at Tahoe, baby. And everyone cheers, you know.
Yeah. It's like that scene with Leonardo DiCaprio, Wolf of Wall Street. I'm not leaving.
Yes, yes, yes.
I'm not leaving.
He's like, Patagonia's in Salt Lake, you know, at the Marriott. We're in Tahoe, yeah. And then he says something like, and we got John Craig, yay! And it was like the two guys start clapping. And I'll never forget, he looked at me and he was like, with the shrug, you know? So I walk out there, you know, and I'm like, how's it going, guys? And so I'm doing my thing. It's going okay.
Were they quiet or were they loud? Or?
They were okay. They were quiet. I mean, I kept it real short. But I had written all these like bits about tents and stuff, you know, and like, you know, hiking, thinking nothing was hitting. So I thought about what he had been doing about talking shit on the other thing. So I was just like, LL Bean, more like smell L Bean, right? And everyone was like, yeah, fuck those guys. So my whole bit was just like trashing, like,
yeah, ripping them, dude.
Yeah, just talking about REI, how they can't fucking sell a fucking jacket or something. Anyway, I did four songs probably and got the fuck out.
Get the fuck out. Well, shout out to Craig. Let's go.
Yeah. Make that money, Craigie. Pay those bills, dog.
Anyway, that's the only time I've ever done a corporate party, I believe.
Yeah. You know, so you talk about like, okay, the journey. It used to get you excited when you felt like there was a mystery of not having people there. And then you switch. Your mind switches. Hey, like, hey, I'm a professional. I sell out places now. How do you get your mind to stop thinking like, you know, stop thinking like future Craigie and start thinking like, oh yeah, this is what I was born to do, is to like be a journeyman and have shitty shows and have good shows and fight through the shitty shows to make it the best show possible. Like, is there a way to trick your brain? Is just like we get more popular and it's just like there's going to be duds.
Yeah, I think the main thing for me is like, well, one, now I have to sort of focus on the fact that now I have this thing that I've always wanted. So what I get excited about now is being able to craft a good show, craft good bits, craft good flow, which again, I couldn't do back then, because if I'm on my way to Charlotte and I don't know if anyone's going to be there, then I don't know if I can even do this bit or not. Now, if I'm rolling into a show and I know it's going to be sold out and I know it's this town and I know I can talk about this thing, you know what I mean? Like, I remember, this is such a silly thing, but this would have been like 2006 or something.
Mm-hmm.
It, you know, in the Bush times, George Bush, W.
Yeah.
And Rumsfeld retired or something, or I think Bush fired him or something like that. Anyway, that day I'm listening to NPR, that happened. It was really hot in the liberal thing. And I wrote like a song in the van outside. Just so happened that in this town, you know, Milwaukee or whatever, the crowd was packed and I did the song and it worked and everything was great, you know? And I was like, yeah, man, this is awesome, dude. I'm so topical. I'm like, I'm going to do this for the next 4 weeks, you know? But the next town I go to, it's like nobody was there.
Yeah.
And so I didn't do it, you know? The next town I went to, there was like three people there. And so anyway, you know, jump forward to then 2016, Trump gets elected, you know, and I write this song that night about
presidential Silver Lining. Yeah. My fucking favorite song.
Thank you.
Dude.
Thank you.
God damn it.
Thank you so much. And
so fire.
Yeah. And that was at the point in my career where every show had people. And so that was like, I got to play that every night and it worked, you know? And so now I can get excited about that kind of stuff because I have a job.
Yeah.
You know, that like makes sense. And so I think it's probably similar to being single versus being in a relationship. You know, when you're single, you can get excited about, I'm going to that bar tonight. Maybe I'll meet the soulmate. Maybe I won't. Yeah. Whereas like, then you have a lover and you can be like, okay, cool. Now I have some, maybe, okay, next week we're going to go to Jamaica and then we're going to, you know, meet the parents and stuff like that. So it's probably something like that. I don't know, because it's been a long time.
Right.
Going to Jamaica or meeting some parents. Yeah. But I mean, I think that that's part of it. It's just, but yeah, you have to sort of define the narrative, because we get excited about these underdog things. We get excited about, I'm Woody Guthrie, I'm sleeping, you know, on trains. But I don't know. It's important to do that.
How do you get excited from, you know, like, I feel like that's the reason why we love to travel. We're people of travel. Yeah. Like, I remember when we were talking during the quarantine and we were both kind of fucking bummed out because we had to stay in one town for fucking 2 years.
Yeah.
Like, so like when your mind state goes to, all right, I'm still this Woody Guthrie in my head. I'm still this guy who's traveling and doing and being a wordsmith. But now that we're getting more popular, how do we not lose that fire of that we had when we were younger? You know, I think about like your live records and versus your studio records, and like, what do you like doing more? You know, like, is it harder to like, I feel like you being impromptu and you building a whole show is so important to what Craigie is, that when you're making an album, do you feel like you have to make an album? No, or do you want to?
I like them both. I think the live ones to me are the most authentic and real. They're more stressful because I don't have as much control. So for example, it's like, I might do a bit and it gets like the perfect response, but I didn't record it, you know? Mm-hmm. So then because I can't record every show. I'm not the Dead or whatever, you know? Right. So
I'm not the Dead,
you know? I'd like to have a guy sitting there with a tape machine and shit, but that's not how it goes. So anyway, but, so then I'm like, okay, let's record these 5 shows. Let's make a live album. That's cool. But maybe maybe the bit didn't get the reaction that it got that one time. That gets in my head, but whatever. So that part stresses me out a little bit, because you kind of just have that one shot and you don't have any control over the crowd. You know, but anyway, the studio album, I like making because I like studio. I like my heroes, you know, did it. And Neil Young and all those guys, like, I love both the kind of things. And same thing with like Dylan or Joni or whatever. So, but the studio albums, they don't feel as authentic because I almost feel like those are like, I'm a conductor and I have this vision. And so I put my little part on there. But to me, the studio albums are all about the other guys and other women, you know, that are on there. That's what really, I think, makes it interesting to me. But people seem to like both.
Yeah.
I like making records, but
what stresses you out more when you're in the process of making a live record versus making a studio record?
I'll tell you this. In the studio with the musicians is really fun.
Yeah.
Mixing that is hell for me. On stage, when I know it's being recorded, is stressful. But mixing that is really fun for me because it's like, turn this up, turn this down, we're good.
Yeah, no problem.
There's not as much thing. So I think in the moment, I have a lot of fun. Well, you know, relatively, it's a little stressful when you only have 5 days and everything's on the clock and time is money and shit like that.
Exactly.
Yeah. The way I do records usually is I have a bunch of friends together and so they're having fun, you know, which makes us happy, but sometimes they're having too much fun.
Yeah, but they're not paying for it.
No, they're getting paid.
Yeah, exactly.
So they're like, hey, let's just keep doing this, guys. Let's just live here.
Yeah, we got another 11 days in us, don't we? You're like, no, we don't. Yeah, let's get this fucking thing done.
Yeah.
What stresses you about mixing your records? I mean, we were talking when you were mixing your record, and I felt like, you know, like, I love giving notes and stuff, but like, you were really focused and hypercritical about the mixing. I'm like, damn, Craigie is a perfectionist.
Sorry you had to see that.
I love it. Yeah. No, that's me too, man.
Well, I appreciate your help on that, because that's coming out in April, and you know, it was people like you that really helped me get through that part. I think it's just I'll tell you this. And I think I might have told you this, but when you make a record, it's really fucked up because you are mixing it for yourself, right? You're deciding what's best, right?
Right.
And you are not the demographic. Like, I'm never going to listen to this thing, right? You know, I'm not going to, you know, nothing against my own music, but that's like ridiculous, you know? You know, you ever meet someone who's like cranking their own shit, you know?
Yeah,
it's like, dude, that fucking...
Chill.
Yeah, yeah. I'll be like hanging with a woman and she's like, I used to date this musician. He would just roll around listening to his own shit. I'm like, oh,
get out of here as quickly as possible.
Yeah. I mean, we have like, so anyway, I'm mixing it to my likes, which is, you know, fucking stupid. I'm not going to listen to it, you know?
Right.
So I might be like, I think the drums are too loud, but who cares what I think, man? So do my listeners, you know, in an ideal world, maybe if I get to it, this would be kind of a fun radical thing. You just get like, like a focus group of like 12 of your fans, you know, to listen to the record and they mix it. Because I don't give a fuck, you know?
That's a great idea.
Yes, can we do that?
That is like kind of like how they do that in LA where people watch a TV yes. show to see if it makes yes. NBC or something.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. What do you call that?
Oh, focus group.
Focus group, yeah. Okay.
I used to get paid like $150 to like check out toothpaste and shit.
Nice.
I loved it. That was the best thing about LA. You could do all those weird things.
Yeah, yeah.
Like you go watch some like soap opera
yeah.
and make some money. That's a great idea, Craigie.
That's what I want to do because that's why I stress because I'll be like, first of all, there's too many things, right?
Yeah.
There's too many knobs. There's too much you can do to something. Yeah. Should the bass be louder? More this, more that. And I don't know what is right.
Yeah.
And again, I also like, it's not for me.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
It's not your world.
And people don't realize that. I think we think like, and sure, like someone, you know, like Dark Side of the Moon or Graceland or these albums that are amazing were made by amazing musicians and stuff. And I don't know, you know, who was engineering back then.
Right.
I don't know what the deal was, but it's like, we obviously give credit. We're like, thank God for Paul Simon's genius to make us Graceland and
yeah.
stuff. But it is, we like it.
Yeah.
And who knows if he likes it, you know what I mean?
You know, people always say like, this music's for me. This music's for, like the musicians, like I make, this is for me. But really, it's for them.
Yes, yes, for
like,
sure.
Your point about like, I'm not going to listen to my records when it's done. I'm not listening to that motherfucker again.
Ever again. Never
no.
again.
No. I'm going on to the next thing.
Yes, yes.
So like,
only a psychopath is doing that.
Yes. It's like, hey, oh God, like 2018, I was fucking on fire.
Yeah.
It's just so crazy. So like, maybe it is like, we have to put less pressure on ourselves to like, think like, we need to like it.
Yeah.
We just got to like, trust our gut. Like, I've been doing this. Like, how do you evolve? You know, like, how do you get out of the rut of just like, just doing stuff because you know that the machine or the fans are going to like that type of song? Like, how yeah. do we keep evolving as musicians, you think, or
yeah.
songwriters?
Yeah. Yeah. That, I think about that all the time. I don't want to stay stagnant. I don't want to put out the same record 12 times. You mm-hmm. know, I think what makes it fun for me, for my live records, I think I will put out 12 of the same ones. I don't give a shit.
Yeah. You don't care.
Because just because I think that's what, right? I mean, like, you don't want a Chris Rock record to, like,
yeah.
you know, you're just like, yeah, do a new, just have new shit.
Yeah.
You know?
This was the first record I've heard of yours that was very experimental.
Yeah.
And I felt like the mix was more spread out and, like, you're really thinking about the whole thing as a whole.
Yeah.
Tell me about the process.
Well, I think, so for me, here's how I stay not stagnant. I think of albums like thematically, so I say like, okay, because what I've learned, if you're a band, so let's say you're Green Sky, you know, no, like you have a sound, right? And people like your sound,
right?
So when Green Sky is in the studio, they at least have to have that conversation. Are we going to stick to our sound or are we going to deviate, right? And if mm-hmm. we deviate, everyone's going to talk about how we deviated from our sound or whatever. I should have picked on someone not modern, but I like those
yeah,
guys
yeah,
too.
Yeah.
And so I think if you're a songwriter, you don't really have a sound. No one gives a shit, right?
Right.
You know, so if you're Neil Young, if you're Arlo Guthrie, if you're Bon Iver, people kind of just, or John Prine, people just like you and your songs. And they're like, do whatever, paint it however you want. And so I like that freedom, right?
Yeah.
Nobody, there's no Craigie sound anyone's yeah. asking for.
Yeah.
So.
Is there a Craigie live show everyone's asking for?
Yeah, I think so. That's what we were talking about
yeah,
before.
Yeah.
I think it's just telling the stories, playing
yeah.
playing songs they like. And if you're like a band is maybe, nobody ever says yes, have a band. And no one's ever said, I didn't like you having a band. So mm-hmm. I don't know if anyone
so cares. Who gives a fuck.
Exactly. so anyway, but so when I make a record, I'm like, okay, what's the theme on this one? What's the vibe? Are we going to try to, are we like going for this like 60s Dylan's, you know, 70s The Band sound, which is probably like my favorite sound.
Mm-hmm.
Are we going to go for like with Asterisk, you know, like this Bill Withers kind of like J.J. Cale kind of groove thing?
Right.
With this one, I had been like listening to a lot of chill beats, listening to a lot of like meditative music because it was locked down and I was like trying to just fucking
zen out.
Yeah. And all the songs that had been written during that time were very sad, meditative, and like it didn't make sense to bring in a band and go like that fun route. And so
yeah, that side project you do with Nico is kind
yeah,
of that
yes,
same vibe.
Similar, you're yes.
probably writing both records at the same time,
yeah,
right?
Exactly.
Okay.
And Nico helped me he taught me a lot about that world. You know?
What did he teach you?
I think just like he's really into logic, which I don't have, but, and by logic, I mean a program, you know, I don't have logic. I also don't have any logic. So Nico, if the listeners don't know, Nico, who plays with Shook Twins, also mm-hmm. one of my best friends and an amazing musician on his own, Cyber Camel is his project. He taught me about, you know, looping a lot of like ambient stuff through those programs. And so when I made the demos for this record, Mermaid Salt is what it's called. Yeah, thank you. He was like, he helped me. So then I made him on GarageBand. I got the beats going. I got the like tempos down and added things so that when I sent him to Bart Budwig, who was the engineer on the project and the other guys playing on the record, I think immediately they knew where we were going with this. And then that just kind of happened. So we got into the studio and I thought maybe we'd play it live, but then everything I was asking for, like these chopped up drum parts, like more sampled stuff. Mm-hmm. Bart was really good at that, you know, so the drummer would play a beat that I liked and then we'd cut it and then, which I'd never done before.
This is the first time you've done track by track like that?
Yeah, exactly.
Everything was live before.
Everything was live
before. Oh my God, it does feel like a more electronical Craigie record.
Yeah, yeah. It feels more constructed, I think.
What was the hardest part of like changing your brain to think like this?
You know, honestly, it was weirdly easier because, you know, when you're playing live, which I like doing, mm-hmm. It's like, okay, let's do the song. We're doing I Am California. We play it live. You got to get, everyone's got to get their take, right, at the same time. So you might have had a great take, but the drummer's like, I missed that one cymbal. Mm-hmm. And again, time is money. You know, you're not the Beatles like with 6 months in the studio. You know what I mean? So you're like, shit, man. And so you keep doing it. And sometimes you compromise. And sometimes you just say like, that's the best it's going to be. Let's move on, guys.
Yeah.
With this one, there's only one take, right? Because you're just like, okay, Nevada, who was playing a lot of stuff. And you're like, okay, Nevada, play this synth part, you know, and he's there, you know, or whatever. Or Cooper, play this drum part. So you were building, you know, which was kind of fun. I'm not saying I would ever do it again because you lose a lot of that, like, mojo, a lot of that, like,
charm.
Yeah, yeah, and honesty. But for this one, I just really wanted to create, like, almost like a little symphony or something.
Yeah,
you know?
It sounds awesome.
Thank you.
And you only had three guys, really, playing?
Yeah, I mean, I played a little bit, but honestly, it was mostly Justin Landis, Cooper Trail, Nevada Sal, and I was just there kind of conducting. I sang, and I played a little guitar, but I also really liked the idea of I would show the other guys what I played and have them play it.
Yeah, play it better.
Yeah, play it better. And just like, I'm at that point now too, where I think the next record I do too, I might have somebody else play guitar. I just think I'm always trying to get out of that rut, have something, everything feel different. It's just kind of a thing for me. And, you know, we'll see if that's what the audience likes.
Is it like diffusing the ego in a sense? Like
there's that too, but I also don't think I'm that good of a guitar.
Yeah, I'm the same way with the piano. Yeah, it's about the words, about the rhythm.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
If I have ego, it ain't on my guitar playing. That's for me.
Oh my God. What was the hardest song to make on the record?
You know, that's a good question. I think the last track called Perseids, which the hardest songs, I'll say this, were the ones that were the most folky to me. You know, the ones that I had written that were really like standard John Strum, you know, and standard John, you know, campfire style.
Yeah.
Because then I had to break out of that. Whereas there were certain songs on there that it was like, I wrote them with the intention of this is going to be like, you know, cut up or this is going to be this. But there's a song called Finn. There's a song called Perseids that are just like, those were songs that I was playing on stage that were fully, also had a lot of chords. You know, I realized when you're doing this kind of like chill beats, meditative stuff, the less chords, the better, the less like, difference between the chorus, the better. So something with like a bridge, oh fuck no. You know, like you're not listening to like Moby and there's a fucking bridge in there and shit, you know.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. So that was hard too. But
how hard is it to write like topical? Like topical music that will last.
Yeah. Fuck, I don't, you know.
Like you said, you're giving up on singing Presidential Silver Lining.
Well, I kind of retired it only because, you know, the thing about that is like he's not president anymore, so it doesn't really make sense. But I have to remember too. It's funny how topical. We could have a whole fucking podcast on topical.
Let's talk about it because I'm very curious about making topical content, but also making topical content in a way that lasts.
Yes.
So it
yes.
doesn't feel like, oh, this is just part of the 2018. You know, yes, like yes, you know yes. what I'm saying.
Well, topical music is a really funny thing because everyone in theory really likes it, right? We cite like Dylan and Pete Seeger, and we're like, this is a really good thing to do, but. I feel like there was a time in that late 60s, you know, or mid to late 60s where it was really cool. Times, they are a-changing. And even like really specific stuff where like Woody Guthrie stuff about like a certain like worker strike or the
right.
or like the dam on the Columbia River. You do it now and I think it can feel very antiquated and cheesy, right? Now, if it's funny, that seems to work still. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But... So people like it in theory, but it goes really quick. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And so to go back to like that Donald Rumsfeld song, I remember I was loving it so much and I was milking the shit out of it. And I remember being at a show and it was just like, everyone's like, we're done. Like,
we're done. Yeah. We're at the-
I had a song. I remember when Obama got elected the first time, I think. Yeah. I wrote this song that was like, it was called You Still Got So Much, and it was this a funny song to Republicans saying, like, don't be sad, even though we have Obama, like, and I listed all these things. I was like, we still have, you know, Rush Limbaugh, you still have Ann Coulter, you still have Fox News, you still yeah. have whatever, NASCAR. And, yeah, and, it, and like, it got a laugh. It was great, and it had this moment where it was really funny, and then I just remember, again, at some point, people were kind of like, it's been too long. It's not funny anymore.
Yeah.
And that song didn't... I couldn't bring that back, but songs like, I have a song about like the Leviticus, the book of Leviticus, mm-hmm. you know that
love
one?
Love that one.
Thank you. That one, I felt, I retired it when the Supreme Court did that ruling where gay marriage was legal. I yeah. remember doing, it was a beautiful day. I was playing in Sandpoint, Idaho, and that was the day. And I was like, here, this is the last time I'll ever do the song. But people still like hearing that one.
Yeah.
The silver lining, people have asked for it. I still feel like it might be awkward. Yeah. It's hard to say, man. I think topical stuff is really weird because we love the idea of it, right? Obviously, if it matches our political feelings, we're like, yeah, fuck those guys, you know?
Yeah.
But do we really want it and how do we want it? And I think the funny thing is always good, right? Humor diffuses.
Mm-hmm.
And if you roll in, you know... Annie DeFranco style, who is, you know, one of my heroes. But if you roll in sometimes with that intensity, it can sort of, it can make things awkward or it can, you know, which yeah. Why I commend her with that kind of bravery. I have done that before, but it doesn't work as well for me. The humor, it sort of softens everybody yeah. up. And
Has it ever gone wrong? Like you ever played in the South and you're
yes.
playing?
Yes, 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 yes. It's very much gone wrong.
What happened? Tell me the worst one.
Well, you know, I think that, I love when it goes wrong yeah. at this point now, because if everything goes right for too long, you're like,
you start sniffing your own shit.
Yeah. Yeah. And I tell Phil, I was like, please forward me the mean emails. I want them, yeah. you know, because he thinks he wants to protect me or whatever, you know, Phil's my manager. I played Kerrville Folk Festival in Kerrville, Texas, which is, you know, you would think it's near yeah. Austin.
Right.
And I had done, this was not that long ago, a few years back. And, I had written a song about AOC, you know.
Yeah, I remember that with Handmaid's.
Yes, Handmaid Moments.
Handmaid Moments.
Yes, we love them.
Handmaid's Tale. That's the complete opposite of what Handmaid Moments is.
I'll tell Anna. Show okay, up there. I think I was still doing Presidential Silver Lining. Yeah, because Trump was still president. I really was just laying it on thick. And I went to the merch table afterwards, and yeah, a lot of people came up and were just straight up. They all, it's funny, this is a very common thing where they say, like, I really enjoyed, not that they all talk like this, but, right. you know, I really enjoyed your set until you started getting political. I didn't like that, you know. I find that the conservatives, not to generalize a group here, but liberals will be mad at a particular thing you said, right? They'll say, like, oh, well, you said this, and I didn't like how you said this. Conservatives who are at a folk show or any music show, they will just be mad that you got political, you know.
Yeah.
And I think the reasoning is because music is inherently liberal, unless it's like pop country or whatever.
Right.
And so if you're a conservative, yeah, you want to listen to good music. You want to listen to Beyonce. You want to listen to, you know, well, whatever, like someone like Crosby, Stills, Nash and Young or Jackson Brown, someone who I think music that seems very fun and tame, right? Yeah. But then you go to the show and they say something that is like against your thing. You're just mad that they reminded you that that you can't listen to all music, yeah, you know?
And, or all opinions.
Yeah, exactly. So, and you don't want to listen to just Ted Nugent and Kid Rock, you know.
Exactly.
So that I think it's funny, and you know, I always try to politely remind them that that's like what my genre is for. You know, mm-hmm. It's like why people like folk music is because Peter, Paul, and Mary, and Bob Dylan, and Pete Seeger, and stuff. But I think it's like they want to hear songs about like the March on Washington or old school issues that are already done and new right. stuff. So when it's never gone so wrong. But if I find more so at festivals. You know, and this past summer, just doing bits about the vaccine in Idaho and in like in places like that. Yeah, and people would you could tell they just were like,
not here, bud.
Yeah, I got an email just recently where I played in Maui and it was a really chill show, and I cuss on stage just because that's how I talk.
Yeah,
and this I got an email Phil forwarded that was just like. You know, I loved your show, but you just casually dropped too many F-bombs and S-bombs. And I thought it was really unprofessional.
Yeah.
And I thought, who's to say what is professional in my job, man?
Yeah. You know? You're coming to see my art.
Yeah, exactly. It is funny to think of that you're on stage and that there is like this is the 20s and there's some sort of code of how to act on
that
stage.
Is not how music should be played.
Exactly. I thought it was funny. I mean, I don't write back anymore and I don't mind.
Do you ever like write mean but like smart emails? You know what I mean?
Here's what happened recently. And if this person is listening, I apologize. I don't mean to call this person out. But I had a show in Kauai that was proof of vax, you know?
Yeah.
Which again, that was the venue's call. I'm not saying that I think that's good or bad. But I think in Hawaii, there's less vaccinated people, you know?
Yeah.
There's more people who don't want to do that. I got a bunch of DMs of people saying, I'm mad that you do this. But one girl, she wrote me and she said, I'm really upset that your show is proof of vax. It's very exclusionary or exclusive or whatever. She said, John Prine wouldn't approve.
Oh my God.
Now, what I wanted to do was send her the article of John Prine dying of COVID. But
yeah.
I didn't do that.
Fuck. I don't want to laugh about that. No, rest in peace, no. John. But like that's fun. That's yeah. like is just that, no email. Just yes, the link.
Just the article. I think that's irony, right? Is that yeah, irony?
That yeah. is irony. Oh yeah, yeah. It's yeah. crazy. I mean, like as you're like developing as a songwriter, and you do want to write about topical stuff because you are a topical songwriter. And I think how do you approach writing something topical without like fucking just saying it straight? You know?
Yeah, that's the tricky part. I think that's the thing is just because I don't want to exclude people. I don't want my crowd to be just liberals. Yeah. I love when a conservative is at my show. I really do. You know, I want everyone to get together because I do think that actually we're not that different, that we do all love each other. And music has the power to get everyone together, right? I don't like politicians in general because I do feel like that they are, they're dividing, you know, which is, I get it. That's how you get your votes, right?
Right.
Whenever anyone gets up there and they're just like, we love each other. Everyone's like, no, that's why Trump does so well because he's an asshole because he's so good at getting his side fired up, you know?
Right.
It's very like high school, you know, politics, but it works.
Mm-hmm.
I think with music is like, that's what's great about music is that we're not running for office and really we're trying to do the opposite and get mm-hmm. everyone together. So yeah, how do you write a song about this thing, about a school shooting or about abortion or about healthcare without immediately turning off half of your yeah. listeners, you know? And so I think I have found that the humor works well because it disarms them a little bit. They also think like, okay, we're having fun, you know? And when I had written that song, like I said, after Obama got elected, this You Still Got So Much, a lot of Republicans were saying nice things to me about it because even though I was making fun of them, it was also could be seen as like a way of like, hey, here's stuff you like, you know?
Totally.
And I like that. And so that's something that I aim to do, but oftentimes it makes it fall flat. Like I was working on this song that basically it was going to be called like, Are You a Christian Who Voted for Donald Trump? And it was going to be this funny song about like, please help me out. Explain to me how that works. And it was going to be like, I understand why all the racists voted for him. I understand why all the sexists voted for him. I understand why all these people, but I don't understand why you. And I worked on it really hard, but I couldn't make it funny, first of all. Mm-hmm. I knew it was the kind of song that would make the liberals, you know, go yeah. crazy, but I don't need to do that, you no. know? And so I just ended up, I dropped it, you know, and, but I still, I have songs like that where I just couldn't get it because what I don't need to do is just get up there and say, you know, fuck Trump or like fuck no. people who whatever, you know, I don't need to do that. And
cause you're separate. You said you're taking half your fan base. Who knows? Maybe half your fan base loves I Am California or something.
Sure, sure.
And they, it's gotta be hard. Cause like I stopped playing Blame It on the Pussy.
Yes, yes.
And we talked about this. It's just like, I felt like it was good for the period. It was not like, it was just like a play on Blame It on the Boogie.
Yeah, yeah.
And like now that, you know, we're approaching, you know, we're evolving with our thoughts and it's hard to play stuff like that. And you don't want to like, because I get all these emails too saying like, oh, he says fuck or he took nitrous on stage or whatever. It's like,
yeah,
it's just hard. You're never going to win.
Yeah.
So you might as well just help try to glue both sides together.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the thing is like, yes, if there's someone in my audience who voted for Trump, I want to change their mind. I right. do, you know, I'm not trying to say that like, I just love everyone as is. I would love to get people to think bigger, but I don't think I'm going to achieve that by saying, fuck you. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
It doesn't work that way.
Well, yeah. And as musicians, as music, we're the glue for people.
Yeah.
We don't
yeah.
want to marginalize anybody or
yeah and that's the point of I don't know if you saw me do this flat earth bit that I was doing for a while. I do this bit that I kind of have exhausted it, so it's semi-retired, but basically just like I watched a flat earth documentary and I don't make fun of flat earthers anymore, and I try to make it like this metaphor of the whole point of it is like I don't give a shit about the shape of the earth anymore, like right. there's too much else going wrong. I'm not going to argue. If I say if somebody is a nice person and they think the earth is flat, be cool. You mm-hmm. know, if you're a dick, then we got a problem. You know, basically it's just like, because that's how society is. If somebody thinks differently than you, it's really nice to make fun of them, but that has not gotten us anywhere. You mm-hmm. know what I mean? And I do think that like, I do, if someone thinks the earth is flat, well, first of all, I also think that's pretty harmless, but,
right.
but I also think that me making fun of them isn't going to make them be like, he made fun of me. The earth is actually round, you know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
If anything, it's going to be like, I think it's flatter. You know, we are all children in a lot of ways when it comes to our beliefs. And so...
To a lot, I mean, to everything, we're still children
yes,
a lot. Like,
yes.
Besides like the things we want to mature on.
Yeah.
Everything else that we don't work on, we're fucking children at.
Exactly, exactly. And so when I see a bumper sticker that says like, you think abortion is wrong, don't have one. And I'm like, that doesn't work. You know what right. I mean? That's like saying you think, you know, I'm not into the death penalty. If I saw a bumper sticker that's like, if you're anti-death penalty, don't kill anyone. It's like, no, but you're killing the people, you know? So
right.
I think that there's, obviously I'm extremely pro-choice, but how do I reach these pro-life for people? Not by telling them they're stupid or right. that they're hypocrites. There's gotta be another way. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? And so that's sort of how I look at it with music is that, I don't want to get that easy clap from my constituents. I don't want the liberals to just have the easy clap. I want to be able, like, you know, I got them. How do I get these other guys? You know?
Yeah.
I don't know. It's complicated, but.
What song do you feel like you felt like the most accomplished of gaining two groups together?
That's a good question. You know, I don't know. I mean, one time I had played Presidential Silver Lining and I got, somebody wrote me, maybe they were bullshitting, but they said, I voted for Trump, but now you have me seriously reconsidering that.
Oh.
One time.
Let's fucking go. Let's fucking go.
Yeah.
Let's go, Craigie.
And so
that's great.
And you know, I don't know if that's exactly the thing, but I think that, yeah, I do think that a lot of people that voted for Trump, was for like one reason, you know what I mean?
Right.
I mean, there's plenty of people who he's God to, whatever, but there's a lot of people out there who are just like, look, I like my guns. I want my taxes low.
Yeah.
Biden scares me, whatever.
No problem.
Yeah. So anyway, I didn't mean to make this into like a political.
No, it's not really political. It's just, we're talking like how to write songs with your views, but also not, you know, isolating the other half of your fan base that also loves the other songs you do.
Yeah, but that's why I don't think it's, that's why it's hard for me to sit down and just, that's why I don't really have any that many love songs, you know?
Yeah.
Because I either want to make the world a better place through this, like, you know, getting everyone together, or I want people who are like feeling hurt, feeling sad, feeling suicidal, feeling alone, feeling marginalized, whatever. I want them to be heard and felt like they're listened to. So I want to sing to that. Two people holding hands, skipping down the beach. I don't really, I mean, they're fine. You know what I mean?
But in a sense, that's deeper love. You're writing about deeper love.
Thank you.
You're loving your, about loving yourself.
Yes, yes. Which I think is more important now. I think maybe when, you know, rock and roll was young, or, you know, that was important for someone to feel like, you know, for a young love to feel like they were heard, because maybe only songs were about marriage or something like that. But we've done, I feel like that's just so done. And so I just am not that inspired. Even when I am in love, I'm not as inspired to sit down and write a song about that. To me, it's got to be about something where I want to lift somebody up. I think, you know, and I'm proud of that.
Yeah.
And I don't, and no one has complained. No one's been like, we need a love song from John Craig. Nobody fucking wants that shit.
The rambling man, the wild man. No.
Exactly.
That's the same thing with me. Like every time I write a love song, it's hard. I write them about my friends' relationships, you know, but like, you know, when my real fans like, oh yeah, you, I mean, listen to your podcast, Andy, you're just having sex with everyone. I don't know if this is true, dude.
Yeah. Well, there's that too, where I think people are like, who's this about? You know?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You know, I wanted to, and I know you got to go to do your thing, but I want to do a tribute to your dad.
Thank you. I really appreciate that.
Your dad passed away when, six months ago?
Coming up on a year, yeah.
Coming up on a year.
March, yeah.
What did he teach you about work ethic? What did he teach you about drive? What did he teach you about just living and being a man?
Well, first of all, thank you for asking, because I think one thing that's been really tricky about this is as a humorous songwriter, it's been, I mean, I do it every show, but it's hard to bring my dad up because, you know, death is something that people don't want to talk about sometimes, or it's very sad. And so one of the hardest parts of the show is to breach the say, okay, my dad passed. Now we're going to talk about it. And I make good jokes which is how he would have wanted it, you know, but, I appreciate you asking, cause I feel like a lot of people don't ask. So what did he teach me? Well, one, humor is, you know, I would not be who I am without that. You know, he was classic dad joke dad, you know?
Yeah.
And to, you know, very.
And he was older, right?
Way older, yeah.
Yeah, like he died. How old was he?
He was 91. You know? Yeah. So, again,
so he had you super late.
Yeah, 50 when he had me, yeah.
Oh, so he was full on dad jokes, dude.
Yeah.
He had 50 years of dad jokes.
Oh, my God, yeah. And so, you know, classic. Like, so when I was a kid, I didn't really think he was that funny, actually, because, one, I heard the jokes, you know,
every day.
Yeah. That's the one criticism I would have of him. I'd be like, Dad, know your audience. Like, we all heard this shit, you know, but that's not what a dad gives a shit about. But he was funny. He crafted it really well. And he was a great storyteller. And I would watch him at like parties or events, like at my sister's wedding, he gave a great, what do you call that? Talk, speech, whatever, you know, speech that was very well crafted,
right?
Funny and sweet, you know, funny and sad. Stuff. And I saw that a lot growing up, you know, I saw him succeed a lot in that. I also saw him, you know, bomb a lot as a dad, but he didn't give a shit.
Yeah.
And so just, I can remember early on imitating that, you know, and stealing his jokes for sure. Cause when you're seven, it doesn't, any joke kids laugh, but then having just the confidence, which I didn't have as a kid at all. I was a nerdy kid. I got picked on, all that stuff, but having the confidence to roll into class with a bit, with a joke, whatever. I wouldn't have had that. And my other friends weren't funny because their dads weren't funny, you know?
So he's all about preparing.
Yes. Now, as far as work ethic goes, he was also extremely, one might argue too much, you know, obsessed with work, had amazing work ethic, you know? And he he worked all the time. When I was a kid, he was gone a lot, you know, because he was working for his family, he was on trips and stuff. But, you know, that was inspiring to see. And he was, that's, we had a lot of talks like that. And so when I became a musician, he was very nervous and not that supportive. And I don't diss him for that. I mean, because I think he's initially saw that as not the noble pursuit, right? Because working is all about like hard work, you know, it's not fun.
That generation was so, the American dream was like 9 to 5, support your family type of thing, you know?
Yeah. And in the beginnings, I was obviously working hard, but there was nothing to show for it, right? I was poor as shit. Yeah, exactly. But I remember, and there's actually a really beautiful photo I have framed that my sister took, but I played the Santa Barbara Bowl opening for Jack Johnson in 2017. And my parents came out, which they weren't really coming out to shows at that time. You know, they're kind of like over it. They came to that show. It was the Bowl with Jack. Sick. Fucking the,
huge.
Yeah, huge. And we got him backstage and everything. They met Jack. And there's just this moment. My sister has the picture where Dad and I are shaking hands. And it's the moment where he's like, oh, this is a job. And then from that moment on, all our conversations were all about, you know, he really was interested in it. You know, he really cared. He would, okay, where are you at now? Okay, how's the album doing? Oh, you sold this many shirts, you know? And he was just really into that. And that was when the, you know, that was 2017. So we had about 4 years of that sort of mutual respect. And
like the tip of the hat.
Yeah, it was really sweet. And, you know, I feel bad. I never was able to, you know, give him grandkids. He has them from, my sister did great, Or you know, he also really valued marriage and stuff like that. And I think he worried about that side of me, but he also got it because he knew he was married 3 times.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because my mom was the third. And so he understood anytime I had a breakup, he got it, you know? Yeah. And
you're the wild man in the family.
Yeah, and he got that too.
Yeah.
You know, I think there was a part, I got that from him in a way. You know, I think the sort of obsession with romance and lust and all that stuff, you know, I think he handled it better. He was better at reining it in a little bit, you know?
Yeah.
So anyway, I appreciate you asking, but I think those were huge, but the humor and the storytelling was big. I watched him, he had it really well calculated. I watched him tell the same story 50 times. I knew where the beats were. I knew where the important hits were, all about landing the plane, they say, you know, finishing the story.
Landing the plane, that's a great analogy.
Yeah, because a lot of people, you'll see this, they'll tell a story and they don't know how to end it, you know?
Yeah.
You got to end it. Because
you got to end it.
The thing about stories is like, they don't end, right?
Right.
The life doesn't end.
No.
So if I'm going to tell you what happened yesterday, you know, it could go into today.
Yeah.
So I got to find out, how do you end it? Which is really hard.
So he got you at end stories?
Yes. Not like he didn't sit me down and say, but...
But by observing him.
Yes, yes, yeah. And I really... And that's something that he knew. I would, you know, the last show that he saw of mine at the Troubadour in LA, he was sitting right above me on that... You've been Troubadour?
Yeah, I love it.
Yeah, and he had...
That's like a hometown show for you, too.
Yeah, exactly. And he had seen, like,
Elton John.
Yeah, Linda Ronstadt, all those guys there. And we had that moment, you know, where I was able to thank him for it. I did many times. He knew. Yeah. And that was really sweet.
Do you think if y'all didn't, you know, like, you know, growing up in LA with like how tough it is to make a living in LA and like blah, blah, blah. Like he's basically like trained his brain to like survive in an expensive city. Do you think he would have been looser on you if you guys lived like in Iowa or
maybe, you know, for him, it wasn't even about money. I mean, it was, but it was about just like the duty of a man, you know, to have this career. And even, I remember even when I would have like smaller jobs, he thought that was cool. But you know, for him, he was just more old school. He's like, no, you got to get that thing.
Yeah. Get grinded out. Yeah. My dad's like that too.
Yeah, exactly. So I don't know. That's a really good question. But I think it was really just it was more about the duty of the man. And again, you know, and you're probably the same way. Like I was breaking new ground in that there was no artist ever in the Craigies that we knew of.
Yeah.
There was no one who hadn't just done a job. And so I think it was just like scary for him, you know?
Yeah. And like, you know, he's so much older.
Yeah.
Like he had you what, he was 51 or 50?
Yeah, 50, yeah, yeah.
Jesus. Yeah. That dick still works though. Let's go. Craigie's out here. Craigie's here.
We're very happy.
Yeah, thank God. I'm thankful that you're in my life and in everyone's life because you are one of the greats.
Thanks, Andy. You're too, man.
Yeah. When's the record come out?
April 15th.
Let's go.
Yeah.
You excited? Nervous? Yeah. How you feeling?
I'm excited.
You like these releases?
No.
No, me either. I fucking hate releases.
I just want it to drop silently and just let people listen to it at their own accord. I don't like all the pomp and circumstance, but I want it done, out, in hands, because that's really when I can begin to focus on the next one, which I'm already, as soon as I get out of that studio, I start writing the new stuff, you know, I can't really relax on it until it's done, until we're out there, released. Also, too, I think it's just like, I trip on death all the time, and all the time I'm like, okay, can I die now?
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, cool, I can, because, you know.
I just put out a new piece.
But when the shit's still getting mixed, I was like, I can't die now. Phil can't be mixing this shit.
Yeah, you know? I got 10 interviews in the can. They need to come out.
Yes, yes, yes.
That's the thing I don't like about the music industry is like, we prepare for like, oh man, 6 months, records coming out in 6 months. I'm like, let's just put it out.
Yes, yes, yes.
You know, because like, if it doesn't get the reaction that I have in my head or my management has in my head of how the record's going to be, and it's a letdown.
Yeah.
It just deflates.
Yes.
So like, we might as well just, and in this ADD culture, I feel like we don't have to like, I don't know.
No. And I'm over all that stuff.
Right, I'm now over all that shit.
I got no publicist. It's coming out.
Let's go.
Yeah,
let's
exactly.
Let's go.
Fuck all that
shit. DIY, baby. Yeah. Let's go.
The people know where it's at. They're going to listen. They're going to tell their friends. Yeah. It's how it's always been. If Rolling Stone doesn't say a stupid thing about it, I love you, Rolling Stone, but if it does, I don't give a fuck. You know, if this blog doesn't say anything, who cares? I just want the people to have access to it, listen to it, tell their friends, and that's it. They can buy a t-shirt if they want. I don't care.
I'm honored because my record comes out that week too.
Really? What day?
Friday the 18th? I don't know.
No. It's got to be the same day. Are we going to be buddy? We're going to be God. Birthday. Woo, I'm hyping yours.
We're going to put this out the same week. Yeah. We'll just hype both our records. Yeah. I think it's Friday. No, it is. Oh, April 8th, the week before.
Okay. All right.
So it'll be Frasco Craigie month, dude.
I love it.
So you going on tour in April? Or are you doing a big one?
Yeah.
Like full out?
Well, you know, for me, what I like to do is have the album release tour a few months after, kind of because I like getting people to know the songs. But I'm doing a big tour in April as the singles are coming out. The album's actually going to drop after that tour. Mm-hmm. And then I hit summer stuff and everything like that. So it's kind of a weird timing. But I also, for me, it's like, I remember I saw Wilco on the Ghost Is Born tour, but it was like 6 months after the record could come out. And it was great because the audience knew every song and it was really cool.
Yeah. And you play them a little bit, you know, like this is going to be probably a challenge for you. These songs, playing them live.
Yeah. Very, very.
Because it's very, there's a lot of sounds in this new record.
Yeah. I don't know what I'm going
to
do.
I'm excited. I'm excited to see what you do with it. Because how you're going to do it solo. Because you love doing the solo show too.
Yeah. I might get a little box or something where I can just push a little.
That's a good idea.
Yeah. I saw
one man band, Ed Sheeran.
Leonard Cohen had that too. I saw a couple of times. And who else? JJ Cale, I think, did some of that stuff.
Fuck it. Yeah. Who cares?
I think it'll be fun.
Do whatever the fuck you want, Craigie.
Yeah.
Seriously. Yeah. John Craigie, thank you. Another year around the sun. And I'm just thankful for your friendship. And so go grab his record. And I can't wait. Yeah. I fucking can't wait.
Yeah. Yours too, buddy.
And I'm coming to E-Town.
Thanks. What's your record called?
My Wash, Rinse, Repeat.
Yes. Wash, April 8th. Wash, Rinse, Repeat.
John Craigie, April 15th.
Yeah.
What is it called? Mermaid Tail?
Salt.
Mermaid Salt. Ooh, hot. Why is it called Mermaid Salt?
We'll talk about
that later. Okay. Craigie, thanks for being on the show and enjoy Denver.
Yeah, thanks.
Stay warm.
Thank you.
You're awesome. Tuned into Craigie the World's Health Podcast with Andy Fresco, now in its fourth season. Thank you for listening to this episode, produced by Andy Fresco, Joe Angelo, and Chris Lawrence. We need you to help us save the world and spread the word. Please subscribe, rate the show, give us those crazy stars, iTunes, Spotify, wherever you're picking this shit up. Follow us on Instagram at World Saving Podcast for more info and updates. Fresco's blogs and tour dates you find at andyfresco.com. And check our socials to see what's up next. Might be a video dance party, a showcase concert, that crazy shit show, or whatever springs to Andy's wicked brain. And after a year of keeping clean and playing safe, the band is back on tour. We thank our brand new talent booker, Mara Davis. We thank this week's guest, our co-host, and all the fringy frenzies that help make this show great. Thank you all. And thank you for listening. Be your best, be safe, and we will be back next week.
No animals were harmed in the making of this podcast as far as we know. Any similarity, drugs, and all knowledge, facts, or fake is purely coincidental.